The Trump administration is terminating nearly all foreign assistance programs run by the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID.
The move effectively guts the six-decade-old agency, which worked to prevent the spread of disease and eliminate poverty and other programs in more than 120 countries.
NPR global health correspondent Fatma Tanis joins us now with the details. So Fatma, tell us what happened.
So the State Department says it's reviewed over 6,000 of USAID's foreign assistant grants, and Secretary of State Marco Rubio has decided to terminate nearly all of them, quote, as part of the America First agenda. Only 500 grants will be continued. Now, those grants funded all kinds of humanitarian and development projects aimed at disease control, migration prevention, hunger prevention, supporting human rights. And the same process has happened over at the State Department, where most foreign assistance grants, around 4,100, have been cut. The State Department says they've saved about $60 billion, which is around 1% of the overall federal budget.
Okay, now, as far as programs go, do we know what kind of programs have been cut?
Well, we don't have a full picture. The State Department says that programs that the USAID is keeping includes food and life-saving assistance for HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria. Secretary Rubio had issued a waiver for those after the stop work order paused all existing foreign aid programs. But we're hearing from aid groups and NGOs that life-saving humanitarian programs, including ones that provide HIV medications, have been terminated. So have programs providing vaccination for polio. And it seems like some of those termination notices have gone out in haste because some groups received them twice. Now, one example I can tell you about a program that's been cut is in Nigeria. It provided clean water for people who were displaced because of attacks by the militant group Boko Haram.
So what's been the reaction to all this?
One humanitarian official told me, quote, "This is a global health massacre." That person was not authorized to speak on behalf of their organization. Now, USAID staff and aid groups are worried that cuts to USAID's programs will lead to loss of life, like in Sudan, where hunger is widespread, and over 1,000 kitchens supported by USAID have closed. Also, children around the world who are receiving treatment for acute malnutrition, they've not been getting their medication and are at risk of dying.
So where does this leave the agency USAID?
Well, it's been effectively dismantled. Today and tomorrow, hundreds of USAID staff who've been laid off or put on administrative leave will be allowed to go into the headquarters in Washington and pack up their stuff. The building doesn't have agency signage anymore. It's been removed. The State Department says the next steps will be working with Congress to reform foreign assistance to ensure that taxpayer dollars are used to, quote, make America stronger, safer, and more prosperous. And the government owes about $1.5 billion to many aid organizations for work that was already done before the Trump funding freeze. And that is now tied up in the courts. The government was given a deadline to make those payments by midnight yesterday, but the Supreme Court intervened and extended the deadline.
All right, that's NPR's global health correspondent, Fatma Tanis. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Beatings, mistreatment, and constant frisks.
That's what immigrants detained at the naval base in Guantanamo Bay say they experienced during the 2 weeks they were detained there earlier this month.
The men are now back in Venezuela, and NPR's Sergio Martinez Beltran has been talking to two of them. Please note, this conversation does mention suicide. So, Sergio, tell us some more about the men you talked to.
Yeah, so both of them are Venezuelans and 21 years old. Mayfred Duran Arape had been in detention for about 18 months, most of that time in El Paso, Texas. He does have a criminal record. While he was there, he was convicted of aggravated assault of a federal officer. The other person I talked to was Joiner Purroy Roldan. He had been in detention for 6 months, and he does not have a criminal record besides illegal entry. He has been accused of being part of Tren de Aragua, which is a Venezuelan gang recently designated as a foreign terrorist organization by the Trump administration, but he says he has never been a member.
Okay, now both of them were detained in Guantanamo for about 2 weeks. Tell us more about what they're alleging happened there.
So both Duran Arape and Purroy Roldan told me the detainees at Guantanamo Bay were not allowed to call an attorney. So they held a five-day hunger strike. At one point, they all blocked the cameras inside their cells so they could catch the guards' attention. And one of them, Duran Arape, also kicked on the cell's door as a protest. And he says soldiers showed up in riot gear.
y llegaban y me golpeaban, me tiraban al piso y me posaban, me ponían los pies.
He says they would beat him up and pinned him to the ground. He alleges he was also tied to a chair 15 times and each time lasted a few hours. Things got so bad, Duran Arapez says he tried to die by suicide twice. And he provided us with photos of injuries to his arms, wrists, and hands. Purroy Roland, the other man, alleges they did not have enough food.
Te revisaban el cuarto, te revisaban cuando salías, cuando entraba.
And he says their cells were searched and they were frisked every time they left.
And what is the Trump administration saying about all these allegations?
So a spokesperson for the Department of Homeland Security tells NPR the agency cannot confirm the veracity of Duran Arapez's claims. She says that detainees have, quote, access to phone utilization to reach lawyers, but she didn't provide evidence. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt also responded to allegations made by some of the migrants detained in Guantanamo, saying the administration is targeting those who break the law.
And if then you further commit heinous, brutal crimes in the interior of our country, like raping and murdering innocent, law-abiding women and girls, and committing heinous acts of violence, then you are going to be deported from this country, and you may be held at Guantanamo Bay.
But it's important to note, that the Trump administration has admitted in court documents that nearly 30% of the detainees were considered, quote, low-threat illegal aliens, lacking a serious criminal record. The admission came as part of a lawsuit by the ACLU demanding migrants in Guantanamo get access to attorneys.
And just for some clarity, I mean, how is Guantanamo different from, say, a regular detention center?
I mean, these two men were held in a part of the base that was built for alleged terrorists post-9/11, and it's been described as a place without transparency. Munir Ahmed is a professor at Yale Law School and represented a Guantanamo prisoner for 3 years. He tells me Guantanamo is run by the military.
That's very different from how immigration detention is typically done. Immigration detention is civil and not criminal and not military.
In an immigrant detention center, immigrants have access to attorneys and can video call their family members. That did not happen with the men detained in Guantanamo.
Okay, that's NPR Sergio Martinez Beltran. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And remember, if you or someone you know may be considering suicide or is in crisis, call or text 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Today, a federal judge in San Francisco hears arguments over whether the Trump administration's firing of thousands of probationary employees should be halted.
It is one of the many legal challenges the administration is coming up against as it moves forward with plans to downsize the federal workforce.
NPR's Andrew Hsu is following all of this. So, Andrew, let's start with what's happening in court today. Who brought this lawsuit?
Yeah, it was originally filed by several labor unions that represent federal workers who have been fired over the last several weeks. So nurses at the VA, for example, or people who worked for the Forest Service. These were employees who were still on probationary status, meaning usually their first or second year in that job. And a lot of them were told that they were being fired for performance reasons, even though many of them had gotten positive performance reviews and some weren't even on the job long enough to get a review. So the labor unions are arguing that the agencies themselves had no plans to fire these employees and only did so at the direction of the administration and specifically the Office of Personnel Management.
All right. The Office of Personnel Management. That's something we've heard a lot lately. So remind us what that is.
Yeah, OPM is the agency that handles HR functions for the federal workforce. But to be clear, its role is to provide guidance to agencies about how to hire and fire employees. It doesn't have the authority to actually hire and fire employees of other agencies. But under this administration, OPM has taken on a far bigger role. For instance, you remember that mass email that went out to the entire federal workforce last weekend asking, you know, what did you do last week? That came from OPM. And in fact, this lawsuit also includes a complaint about this email. The unions argue that OPM exceeded its authority in asking the entire federal workforce to report back what they accomplished, and also in telling agencies to fire their probationary employees. President Trump has repeatedly argued that he's revamping the federal workforce in order to save American taxpayers money and to clean up fraud and waste. But the union's attorneys say there's a way to go about doing that legally, and this is not it.
So apart from that lawsuit, I know you've reported on six fired workers who've been temporarily reinstated. Who are those workers?
Yeah, these are six employees at different federal agencies who were fired about 2 weeks ago, and they were part of a separate complaint that a different set of attorneys brought to the Office of Special Counsel. That's the federal watchdog agency that's responsible for protecting federal workers from illegal actions by the government. So the special counsel began looking into these firings and found evidence that agencies hadn't followed proper procedures for firing them. And this special counsel asked a separate federal board to issue a stay. And on Tuesday night this week, the board granted that and ordered these six workers reinstated through April 10th so that the special counsel's investigation can continue.
Okay. Just only six people?
Yeah, for now. The attorneys in the case, including Michelle Berkovich, have asked the special counsel to seek relief for, you know, many thousands of probationary workers who say they were fired in the exact same way. Here's what she said.
I mean, these are hardworking individuals. Not only are these just people who have a job, they're people who want to make this country better.
And the Office of Special Counsel A, they have said that they're looking into ways to address a larger group of people who have been similarly fired. The office, though, doesn't normally pursue complaints like this, so this is really unprecedented, as are the firings that led to this investigation. And lastly, I'll just note that this week we also saw the Trump administration issue guidance to agencies on further downsizing, on deeper cuts that are ahead, so we may continue to see litigation there.
All right, that's NPR's Indra Shu. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.